Hi, I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald. You're listening to KLCC's Northwest Passage.
And I'm news reporter Brian Bull.
And I'm the host of Morning Edition, Ani Katz.
And I'm Tiffany Eckert. I'm a reporter with KLCC.
Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the stories we covered this week on KLCC, including Tiffany's three-part series on homeless youth in Lane County. We'll get some insights and backstory on that in just a few minutes. But first, Ani, what were some of the top stories in our news this week?
So we'll start with the lighter one. There's a really cool event happening in Eugene over the weekend called Hack for a Cause. And basically, professionals and students are going to hang out in downtown Eugene all weekend and form teams to help governments and local organization with problems that they see and find ways that technology can help them solve those problems. So that's happening over the weekend. KLCC is actually a sponsor of that event. And they've helped in the past Whitebird Clinic, the Egan Warming Center. This year, they're going to be working with HIV Alliance and Shelter Care. So usually there's some good stuff coming out of that.
The Oregon legislature is in session, and we had quite a bit of activity this week. Maybe start with Monday, which was Earth Day.
So they tried to pass a ban on styrofoam food service containers. And it would have been nice if that had happened on Earth Day. But a Democratic lawmaker was out sick that day, so the bill did not pass by one vote in the House of Representatives. She came back the next day, it passed, and it now heads to the Senate. If it is passed, it wouldn't go into effect until 2021. So there's plenty of time for businesses to kind of work with that. I believe it would be the first ban of its kind that would be statewide. Cities around Oregon, like Ashland and Portland, have bans, but it would be the first statewide ban. So that was Earth Day, kind of.
We also heard some kids were protesting in Salem that day, calling on lawmakers to pass a cap-and-trade bill, protesting climate change, the lack of action on climate change. And there were... Later in the week, there were folks protesting legislative efforts to limit exemptions for vaccines.
Right. So House Bill 3036 would eliminate non-medical exemptions to state-required vaccines. This is obviously a super hot-button issue. Very interesting tape that we've had this week from that, including from a Republican lawmaker, Dallas Hurd, who actually choked back tears as he pleaded with his Democratic colleagues to vote against it.
Please. Don't do this. Be the Democratic Party of the past who stands up for the little people, who has changed this guy's heart. Don't go backwards. I'm begging you.
Basically, they want to make it really hard to get an exemption. Lawmakers have approved tweaks that would make it a little easier for parents to get vaccine exemptions for valid medical reasons. But I think they're going to be working on taking a lot of the other ways that people have been able to get around those exemptions out. And so there's a lot of parents protesting, even just in my own daughter's school. The PTO mm-hmm. page is very active. So this is something that I think is not going to go away anytime soon. And of course, the reason that we're all talking about it now is because there are measles outbreaks around the country, including we had one earlier this year in Washington and close by in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And just one more that I think is noteworthy is has to do with gun legislation.
So House Bill 2013 is called kind of the boyfriend loophole. The Oregon House voted earlier this week to approve a bill that's meant to make it harder for domestic abusers to keep their weapons. The bill actually, this is unusual for a gun-related bill. It actually has bipartisan support. It passed out of the House of Representatives 43-15, so not close, and it now heads to the Senate.
Okay. Well, Brian, you had several stories that you were working on this week. Can you share a little bit about your stories?
Absolutely, Rachel. First off, we're looking ahead to the wildfire fire season because as the weather improves and the weather gets warmer and drier, of course, that brings back the prospects of wildfires across the Pacific Northwest. I talked to John Saltenberger. He's with the Northwest Incident Coordination Center, and he's what's called a fire weather program manager. That's quite the job title. He says overall fire season in the Pacific Northwest is not going to be as intense as recent years, so that's a good note. But he says the risk is going to be greater for residents of Oregon and Washington, depending on which side of the Cascade Mountain Range you live on. So what's going to happen in the coming months, beginning in June, going through maybe as late as August or even early September, is we're going to see a lot of rain showers and thunderstorms happening on the eastern side of the Cascades, a lot of moisture, therefore, while west of the Cascades is going to be a lot drier and hotter and therefore more susceptible to fires. Now, adding to this checkered forecast, segueing into my next story of the week, is the annual State of the Air Report. This is done every year by the American Lung Association. For Lane County, as well as many others in Oregon that happen to be in the Willamette Valley and the more fire-susceptible areas, Lane County got a failing grade of F, and there's a number of counties like that as well. The problem being, according to Joe Niehaus of Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, or LRAPA, is that this immediate area was already on the brink of bad air quality anyway because of all the wintertime stoves and fireplaces that go on, and that adds a very dense cloud of particulate matter to the air. So with the fire data that's added in from 2015 through 2017, it's got a pretty bad quality to it already. So hopefully fire season this year will indeed be less severe. And that's kind of fighting against the geography of the Willamette Valley anyway, because it tends to keep a lot of smoke, not to mention pollen, trapped in a very dense, miserable cloud for weeks on end.
Now, Brian, you mentioned wood smoke and the wood stoves, and we had a pretty intense winter with a huge snowstorm, and you've been looking into reports from counties about the cost of the storm damage.
Yeah, and boy, we sure can't forget that storm because we had a lot of disruptions here in the station, and at our license holder, Lane Community College, was shut down for that week. Mm-hmm. A lot of disruptions, a lot of utilities and emergency responders were pretty much hard-pressed to account for the damage and for all the emergencies that came through. We had about a foot and a half of snow dumped on this region in late February, and a lot of digging out, a lot of damage that people are still cleaning up. We're learning now that that particular storm cost Lane County $17 million and Douglas County $11 million. And according to the estimates statewide, it seems like the overall damage estimates come to around $30 million. So, yeah, not a very pricey incident. And there's still some damage that's being assessed because I don't believe that ODOT and infrastructure damage that had occurred, including Highway 58, have been fully tallied in. But still, that's a pretty high price tag. Now the counties are just waiting because a disaster declaration was made for many of these affected areas. And if President Trump approves, they will be reimbursed for about 75% of damages through the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But as of yet, and I'll try to check in with the county on this, the White House has not responded to those declarations.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
So, Tiffany, this week we're hearing your three stories profiling youth who've been homeless in Lane County, kind of looking at how they got there and how they were able to get out of homelessness thanks to community organizations, social services in the area. And this project didn't really start out as a series. So tell us a little bit about the process you went through with this.
That's true. It did originate, the concept was to do a feature story, which tends to be about the length of one of these stories, but as is often the case, it is, there was just so much, information that was received, and the problem was so big. In fact, the name of the series is Hidden in Plain Sight, and the reason for that is that advocates say that we may notice kids over here, you know, loitering over there, but we don't really see them. And when I sat down and talked to some of the young people, really young ages, tender ages, when they became homeless, it just begged for more. We wanted to hear more. So Jacob and Michaela and Kelly told their stories about how they came to experience homelessness. Each one was different, but the thread that was common was that they were young and they were without a place to live. They did not have a home to call their own. And then each one, through the, as you said, support of social services, a sort of safety net, they were able to each find a home. And something I found interesting at the end as I was finishing the last segment of this feature was in each one of these stories, faith-based agencies come up. And that was not intended. It just happened that way. So we just have to know that besides the Department of Health, Human Services and organizations that are working hard, faith-based organizations are really at the top as far as putting homelessness as a high priority, a human issue that needs to be addressed. And so I found that quite interesting at the end of the day that was the work. That was the way it all kind of fleshed out. But yeah, as a series, I think it worked to inform our public kind of one day at a time and let folks know the problem and some of the active solutions in Lane County.
Tiffany, I got to listen to your series every morning when we aired it. And, you know, it's so easy as someone who drives around the area constantly running kids from here to there to just assume things about the youth, that the kind of youth that you spoke to, like hanging out at the bus station or in front of the library or across the street from the high school. And what I loved about what you did is giving them a voice and then also letting us know that, like, you can assume whatever you want about these kids, but they all have backgrounds and stories of how they got to where they are. And you really humanize their stories really beautifully. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank the kids. They really, you know, were very honest. And it wasn't all pretty. In fact, most of it wasn't. Every one of them went through trauma. Homelessness is hard.
A lot of people don't really know a lot about it, what it's like to be homeless and to be an unaccompanied minor and, you know, to not be able to focus on school or do an extracurricular because you're always worried about where you're going to sleep at night or, you know, how you're going to get to school or, like, what you're going to wear if you're going to have clean clothes to wear.
And when you're 14, 15, 16 years old, it's almost indescribable. However, that was what I tried to do, was explain to folks what it is. And then just how they didn't give up, you know. So it was very hopeful.
Well, thanks so much, Tiffany. And of course, you can find Tiffany's series on our website, klcc.org. Well, I just wanted to mention, I got to go out in the field this week to tour the Eugene Steam Plant, which is this cool old building. It used to produce steam to heat buildings in downtown Eugene. It was built in 1939. I think it ceased operation in 2012, and at that time it was only operating very minimally. So it's a cool building. It's very tall. It's got these beautiful tall windows and a view of the river. It's right on the Willamette River, right by the EWEB headquarters. So there's a group of people that's put together a proposal to create sort of a mixed-use public space in the building and transform it so that people can come there for food and drink and make it into an arts venue and possibly also have sort of classrooms in there, some kind of connection with the university maybe. So it's really exciting. It was so neat to get to go into a place that not very many people have been inside.
And you said it was a little precarious too, because they had these long, tall, narrow stairs or something?
Inside, I was a little, you know, I had my equipment with me because I was recording. And so going up and down these rickety metal stairs was a little scary. And there was also the opportunity to get up on top of the boiler to take a look around and I said, no, that's okay.
Rachel, from the pictures you took of the tour, were you able to, actually being in that space, were you able to envision what they're talking about?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's so interesting how Eugene has this incredible river that is beautiful and people love to walk and run and bike by it. But we have very few places where people can hang out and maybe have a meal by the river. There's really only two restaurants near that look out on the river right now. And so the idea of using that space in that way makes so much sense. And, you know, the city really wants to create this whole, you know, park and make that into another neighborhood by the river eventually.
And it sounds like it's going to be somewhat tied to the 2021 World Track and Field.
Yeah, they're hoping to have the park created by then. The city is putting together a park on the riverfront. And then the first phase of the steam plant project is aimed at creating a sort of a pavilion that could be used as some sort of celebration space during the 2021 Track and Field World Championships. So we'll see what happens.
That'll be fun to watch.
Just to close out our program today, I wanted each of us to maybe weigh in with stories that we heard this week. What kind of is sticking with you from either the local or national news this week?
Joe Biden's in it.
Yeah. Okay.
It brings the grand total to 20, I think.
And so I'll be curious to see who comes traipsing through Oregon in the coming year, because we're going to be in the thick of campaign season. And I'm not sure if Oregon is a must-win state, but I remember that at least Donald Trump came through in, what was it, May of 2016, promising to bring back the timber industry. I'm not sure much has happened on that front, but maybe he'll be back again and have a new direction to go on. I don't know. This is going to be really exciting to watch between the what seems like nearly two dozen Democratic candidates and the incumbent.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Tiffany?
Off the top of my head, I was really intrigued and looked into the measles the malaria vaccination. That is if this works and they're taking it into sub-Saharan Africa, they're starting to work in a variety of means. And by the way, it is a Bill and Melinda Gates effort, founders of NPR. But the idea that this vaccine could work, it is amazing. I mean, the context I read, if 1 in 200 children are saved, that is success. That's how many kids are dying of malaria in this world. So as a health reporter, I found that to be hopeful.
So I have two stories actually that they're a little lighter, semi-lighter, but we had some 90s nostalgia on Morning Edition this week. So earlier there was a story in their series about American anthems on Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, which was definitely a song of my teen years. So I loved listening to the background on the band and the song. There were some really great little tidbits of information in that.
This song in particular felt so ambivalent about its own success. I found it hard, tired of finding
where it never found. Oh well, whatever, never mind.
And then also the Cranberries, who lost their lead singer last January, have released their what is now their last record. It wasn't going to be, but because she's no longer alive, it's their last one. So I got to spend the morning listening to her voice and just remembering, you know, really playing that quite a lot. So those were two fun stories that I got to hear.
Well, I had the same takeaway as Ani. So both the segment on Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit and the Cranberries segment that really brought back, both of them brought back a lot of memories for me because I kind of grew up in that era. And also Dolores O'Riordan's voice is just so distinctive. And the way that they put together that album was they had been sort of playing with some songs that she had written and she had recorded some demos, and the band was able to bring those demo recordings and mix their music in. So it's pretty cool to be able to have that last album from her. And everything you wanted was nothing that you wanted.
in the end. And it's strange when every day you dreamt of was nothing that you dreamt of.
Thanks so much for joining us for this week's edition of KLCC's Northwest Passage. I'm Rachel McDonald.
And I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Ani Katz.
Tiffany Eckert, signing off.